Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. My name is Phil Strum. So glad you joined me today. My guest today is one of the true rising stars of pro wrestling. It's Richard Holiday. Richard recently returned to the independent scene after a bout with Hodgkin lymphoma. He's been all over, from Game Changer Wrestling to Northeast Wrestling, one of the hottest free agents around. So it's a pretty good chance you'll be seeing him on your TV very soon. I thought we had a really good conversation. So here we go right now with Richard Holiday. So happy to be joined today by who I think is a surefire bet to be on your TV sooner rather than later, the one and only Richard Holiday. So glad you joined me today on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. Thanks for joining me.
Absolutely. Surefire bet. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully I'm right, but I think I will be. But first question I know is on everyone's minds who has followed your career. You were diagnosed with Hodgkin lymphoma in 2022, and you made your return to the ring earlier this year. First, how are you feeling now? And does something like that change the way you view your life and your career?
Certainly changes the way I view my life, 100%. But to answer the former part of the question, yeah, I feel great. I feel great. Probably the best I've ever felt, to be honest. I feel rejuvenated. I feel like my body is like working again, like maybe even better than prior to everything. So I'm in such an amazing physical, mental space right now. And, you know, I definitely look at life and my career and how appreciative I am for both much differently now. So definitely a different outlook, but it's a good one.
I had the chance to see you back in the ring for Northeast Wrestling in Bethany, Connecticut last month against, I think it was against Victor Chase. What has it been like for you to step back between the ropes again? What kind of feelings rush through you when you're back walking down that aisle again that might be, you know, is any different than it was before?
No, it's a euphoric feeling. It is. It's, you know, every time I go in there now, it's, you know, I'm so thankful for the opportunity to do so and do my craft and do what I am truly believe I was meant to do on this earth. And I do feel like there's a purpose behind my work now. And, you know, it's what I can do from a, you know, inspiration level. And I think it could be indirect inspiration, right? Like, I don't think I need to go out there and wear it on my chest every single time I go out there of what I went through. But I think if somebody were to find out and then they see me, what I'm doing, and they're like, whoa, I didn't know that. I think that's a really powerful message that could be given.
Have you had any of those interactions so far with people since you've been back for a few months now? You pretty much have had the summer, I think, since you've been back. But when was the first match back?
Yeah, it's been the summer of Holiday, as I've been saying. The first match back was June 10th. And yeah, I've had plenty of interactions. You know, I've met so many fans, specifically young fans, who have come up to me and they're like, hey, like, I have this. Like, it's so cool that you're doing what you're doing and you had this. It just gives me a new outlook and inspiration. And I think that's such a beautiful, wonderful thing.
And now for you, I think you're ordinarily a bad guy or a heel in a lot of the scenarios that you're doing, but everyone was wishing you the best for so long. It's so hard not to cheer you, you know, in what you're going through right now. Is that a good adjustment? Are you confident enough in your own ability to perform that, you know, you figure you'll get that back when you need it?
Here's the way I look at things, Phil. I believe that everybody has, you know, layers to their personality. And I think, Phil, I'm sure if given the wrong circumstances, you can be a bit of a jerk in a sense. I think anybody could. I think anybody has the ability to be good or bad. It's all kind of inherent in ourselves. And, you know, given the circumstances right now, I've been in a good mood and I've been so joyful to be back and doing everything that I'm doing. And I'm obviously confident in myself as a performer, just anyway, you know, anyway, I get into the ring, whatever mood I may be in that day or that month or that year, whatever mindset I'm in, Richard Holiday is going to give you something special and you're going to go home remembering me.
Very, very good. Any matches or moments from your comeback so far that have stood out to you?
Man, they've all been special in their own right. You know, I would say a couple of highlights that I've had was the debut I had for GCW. I thought was a ton of fun and was something I think a lot of people didn't really anticipate. I don't think that they saw that match coming. And when it was announced, it garnered a lot of attention and a lot of buzz. But, man, just every match I've had, I had a match at American Rana against Brad Hollister. I thought it was super special. I feel like I'm on probably the best run of my career, to be honest. From an in-ring standpoint, I'm putting on matches that I think are can really stand up to anything I've ever done. I just had a match with Hammerstone in California that was received this is awesome chant from the audience, which is always reassuring. So, you know, everything I do, everything I've been doing has been momentous, and certainly I appreciate all of them.
And thinking about it now too, I like that I can also be a jerk if I want to in certain scenarios.
I'm sure you could. Anybody could be a jerk given the wrong circumstance, right?
Yeah, it's everybody's individual perspective of how they view you. So I'm sorry for anybody out there if I've been a jerk to you, but you know, I don't really care. But
you shouldn't.
Yeah, exactly. Are the independents sort of like a lab for you to sort of figure out what works and what doesn't? What do you and just what are you looking for when you go to when you take an independent booking?
Sure, yes and no. I mean, I go to independent bookings that I think are good for me and they're good for my career. And you know, anywhere that I go, I'm pretty selective. So you know, I definitely do my due diligence and make sure that I'm performing for a company that takes it just as serious as I take it. That's probably the most important thing for me. And you know, I'm on a run right now where I'm not signed to, you know, a major company or a corporation or anything like that. And I can take bookings as I go and go where I may please, which is a lot of fun, I will say. You know, I've said I like to flex the free agent muscle a bit. And, you know, while I haven't popped up anywhere that might garner, you know, contractual talks or anything like that, or on screen at least, I'm having fun. You know, it's fun. I love the indies.
With you back in the mix, it makes sense now that you are one of the hottest unsigned guys out there now that you've left MLW. What would go into the decision-making of where Richard Holiday lands?
Yeah, so I think that process, if and when it comes about, is going to be one where it's, you know, where do I ultimately want to go? Where do I ultimately feel like I am going to flourish and be the best version of myself and have a long career there? There's a lot of great options. The industry is very sublime right now. There's so many great places to go and work and make a name for yourself and continue to, you know, etch yourselves in history and whatever, however you want to spin it, right? There's a lot out there. So I got my eye on a few places and I'd like to think that they have their eye on me. I mean, it's, you know, I've said this before, like, listen, I'm not in the boardrooms. I wake up every day as me. I go where I go. I put on the performances that I put on. And then ultimately, if they want to underline my name in that said boardroom and have a discussion, then I'm open for it.
I saw the interview you recently did with Sean Ross Sapp. You guys were talking about how much the landscape had really changed in the industry also. But to me, even despite the changing landscape, the talent is still going to end up rising to the top of wherever, you know, anybody goes. I mean, you kind of see it that way too, is that it also, I guess, kind of depends on who's making the decisions.
Listen, Macho Man said it best. The cream rises. It Very always nice. Rises. You know, that's how it is in any industry, in any sport, in any job. The best person is always going to rise to the occasion. And that's why you're going to see certain people in numerous places. I do feel like the independence is almost very territorial now, where it's like, you know, a lot of guys are, you know, just Northeast based or just Midwest based or just West Coast based or just, you know, wherever based. And then there's people who are fortunate enough where you've made a name for yourself where different of the quote unquote territories will bring you in. And I feel like I'm one of those people. And, you know, I've delivered on, you know, any expectation that people may have, which is great. So that's kind of the part of the fun, right? Is showing up in these different territories and showing up in these different promotions. And I like debuting in places and in new fun places. Like I'm debuting for Dreamwave Wrestling in October in Chicago. It looks like an amazing spot. So we're going to have some fun that night.
Very good. Take me back to the beginning, the very beginning of your wrestling career, if you can, and explain to me, you know, what it was like training under, I believe, Paul Roma and Mario Mancini at Paradise Alley Professional Wrestling.
Yeah,
and they just seem like two old pros who know their stuff. What are those guys like, and what was it like learning from them?
Two old pros for sure. No, great guys. And listen, I was actually the first student at PAPW. So I actually received a lot of one-on-one training. There was no other students. It was just me, Paul, and Mario. So, you know, learning to bump, learning to hit the ropes, learning all that stuff, like, it came very easy to me. And it's like, how do you progress from here? We don't have tons of students to, you know, run drills and things like that. So the psychology of wrestling was really drilled into me via Paul and Mario. And I had a lot of one-on-one training. And then ultimately, you know, the brand grew and PAPW started gaining more students. And then we started to get into all those things. But I feel like I really got like wrestling 101, like wrestling, you know, 201, 301, like before a lot of other people did. So I think that really parlayed into, you know, the way that I wrestle now and my career and how I approach things.
It's fascinating to me, you know, to kind of hear too. Like, I'm not sure if everybody nowadays would necessarily know those guys so great. But, you know, they were everywhere, you know, and you look back in the 80s, you know, they were right there in the thick of things in the WWF in the 1980s, especially Paul Roma all over the place, you know, for a really, really long time, too. So probably a great experience. And also when you're the first student at a school, I'm guessing that you end up helping some of the subsequent students there, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, there was a time where I was the trainer where Paul had some medical stuff that he had to take care of. And I ran class for like a year and a half. It was a great experience, and there's a lot of students now who are on the independents who are doing great, and I get to see, you know, how well they're doing, and, you know, I don't take credit or anything for their career, but it's nice to know that, you know, I played a little bit of a part in it.
Is there anything that those guys individually, something that they specialized in that really kind of resonated with you?
No, I think that there was just so many different types of students, and, you know, when they're younger, you know, younger guys than me, they have so many different outlooks on wrestling and like different styles that they like a little bit more. And, you know, there's a specific style that, you know, I wrestle and it shows in my work, but, you know, for them, they're like, oh, well, I like this and I like this. And I'm like, okay, well, how can we all kind of bring this together and see what we can come up with? So it was a fun experience for me. I certainly learned a lot.
How big of a fan of wrestling were you before you became one?
Huge, huge. You know, I always say that we're the biggest fans because we decided to do it. Right. Period where I didn't really watch it. It was probably around the time where I was playing college football, but it's always been the biggest part of my life for sure since I can remember, since I was probably 5 years old.
Very good. Are there other people who you consider your mentors in pro wrestling?
I mean, Paul and Mario are you know, my wrestling dads, maybe dad and uncle. Yeah. You know, for the most part, I mean, there's certainly people who have been very influential on my career and, you know, just people who I've worked with over the time. But I mean, Paul and Mario are really my people that I've always leaned on for the most part.
How did you find, you know, the Richard Holiday persona and what is your creative process like for pro wrestling?
I mean, I just think it's me. I think it's pretty authentic. Everything that you see, you know, obviously there's things that may be turned up a bit, but you're just turning them up. I'm not really, you know, manufacturing anything all too much. There's really not anything artificial about Richard Holiday. That's who I am. I mean, I have a degree in marketing. It's, you know, I am college educated. I am articulate. That's just kind of the way that I go about things. And I feel like I deliver an authentic performance of who I am each and every time you see me.
And I was going to ask you too, going back a little bit to the, you know, the kind of the early influences in wrestling, is there like a first match or a first angle that you remember connecting with best when you were watching wrestling when you were younger?
You know, I mean, not really. I mean, because to be honest, my favorite wrestlers when I was a kid were Kane and The Undertaker. So I can't really say that there was a time where I was like, that's what I want to do when I'm older. I think it was just the whole thing, like the whole spectacle to me was just like, this is amazing. So I honestly, I wish I could give you like the pinpoint answer. Right. Like, this is when I knew I was going to be a wrestler. I think it was, I was just hooked from day one. I don't really remember what it was.
But Kane and Undertaker was its own whole story anyway. So
the best, the best.
And so layered and for such a long period of time. Did you actually debut at Northeast Wrestling, or did you debut on some other shows, Paradise Alley, before that?
I was trying my first match ever was in South Bend, Indiana.
Interesting.
Against Brian Costello, who was a friend of Roma's from the 80s.
I remember.
That was my first match. We drove like 14 hours to Indiana. We stopped at Waffle House. You know, we stayed at the hotel. We had the whole wrestling experience, and it broke me into the business. And I remember going out to dinner that night, and Tito Santana said to me, "All right, you're one of us now." And that was actually a really cool moment for me. And I remember that distinctly. So that was actually my first match. And then we came back, and my Connecticut debut was for Paradise Alley.
Interesting. Interesting. I can only imagine. I didn't even know Brian Costello still would have been wrestling when you would have been starting. So what was that? What was that experience like? I know it's your first match, so that everybody's first match is probably an interesting story. But what was it like getting in there with him?
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, I just remember showing up and going in the locker room. It was actually at a minor league baseball stadium, so like the locker room was beautiful, big locker room. And you know, I just remember a lot of old timers in there, a lot of legends. You know, Cowboy Bob Orton, Greg the Hammer Valentine, Roma, of course, and seeing him in that light, you know, seeing him as a booked talent as opposed to my trainer, that was really cool for me. And then there's like me, and I'm just in there, and I'm like, whoa, like, look at all these, you know, guys who have, you know, kind of paved the way for me. And then I got in there with Brian, and it was a lot of fun, and I had my first match. And listen, is it something that I would watch back now and be like, look how good this was? Probably not. But, you know, I have that memory now, and I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Yeah, I did have the pleasure of meeting Roma. Actually, it was actually at one of your matches, because it was at the Melrose Ballroom for MLW, and he was hanging out and watching some of the show that night too. So I had to go say hello, because you know you have to. But
absolutely. I remember when he came to that in New York. Yeah,
yeah. What did MLW mean for your career, and how did you grow in your time there?
Meant a lot. Meant a lot. I have no problem saying that's the promotion that put me in the national spotlight. And, you know, I felt like there was a run in 2018 when I won the ECW Super 8, which is a very prestigious tournament in wrestling. So many major names have either competed or won that. So to have my name on that list was cool. And then that kind of went into the MLW signing. And then I spent 4.5 years there. And, you know, I traveled, you know, all over the place and, you know, got to see the world with MLW and get some national TV experience and get media experience. And that really opened it up. And then the independents saw me doing my thing on MLW, and it parlayed into more bookings there. So it really was just a really wonderful experience. And I'm very thankful for my time at MLW.
Where do you see them kind of in the greater landscape of wrestling now, and how, and in the ways that they present it?
Yeah. I mean, I'd be lying if I said I kept up with it like full throttle. I mean, I see some things on social media. I still maintain a good relationship with Court. Although we don't really find ourselves talking wrestling all too much. We more talk about the Yankees, which is great, but I see what they're doing. It looks like they're kind of doing more of like a youth movement, getting a lot of younger talent in there, which is great. That's what they should do and kind of build up from there. And they still have some really experienced guys who can draw and who can steer the ship. So I'm sure they're in a great spot, and I wish them nothing but the best.
Yeah, fun shows to go to. And I guess talking about the Yankees is maybe a little bit better than talking about my Mets, but, you know.
Hey, we're making a push. We're making some sort of push. I asked Court, I'm like, are you sipping the Kool-Aid here? Because we just swept the Astros and we're suddenly like 7 out. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. They stink.
I'm just waiting for these 11 guys that the Mets got on the deadline to see what they end up doing with them. So, but in MLW, you were part of the dynasty with Alex Hammerstone and the current AEW World Heavyweight Champion, MJF. How did the three of you guys complement each other?
In a way that's kind of tough to describe. Like, you would never think that us three would get in there and mesh the way that we did. You would think that it would be some semblance of oil and water. But it was just three dudes who just, like, knew what this was and how fun it could be. And we made the absolute most of it. And probably made some of the most memories in MLW history. And I think we're still to this day probably one of the most talked about entities that has ever been part of that show.
What do you think of the rise of MJF and what he's doing now? It'll be pretty fun to see you guys cross paths again at some point in your careers too. Just what makes MJF tick? You know, what can you tell me about him?
You know, he is who he is, and I'm super proud of him. And, you know, he's on top of the world right now, and he's doing great. And, you know, he is dedicated to this and being the best. And he shows that every time he goes out there.
And it's kind of funny that in his current angle, he's kind of telling people, oh, I never had any friends. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I watched MLW before. You had a couple. So
sure. Did you agree with that? Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, maybe not. Would I be the best man at his wedding? I don't know, but probably not. But yeah, I mean, we certainly have a history, and people still love to talk about it.
That's great. How much did you enjoy doing the vignettes and segments outside of the ring that you got the chance to do in MLW?
Probably more than the inside the ring stuff. I mean, to me, that's kind of, I don't want to say that's where I excel, because I feel like I excel in every facet of this business, but that's something that I certainly enjoy. And I think a lot of people in wrestling don't enjoy that much. And I think they're wrong for that. So I love the vignettes.
Did you like them? Because it does, you mentioned before, kind of adding the layers to your character. Is that kind of, you know, what you liked about it? Or
it adds all the layers. It adds every layer. It's, you know what I mean? It's the entire thing. And a lot of people don't realize that. They think that they can just, you know, just focus on the in-ring stuff. And I don't know, in my opinion, that'll only get you so far. I think people need to see who you are to resonate what you do in the ring.
Yeah, and I think there's multiple ways you could do it, too. You could do it with the vignettes, but you could also do it with, like, an interviewer, you know, the back and forth with that. That's going to be kind of a different, necessarily, you know, kind of take for, you know, where your character ends up going, too.
Right.
Did you have a favorite MLW moment or match from your 4 years there that you can point to?
Yeah, probably with Hammerstone. I think that was the best. I think that was the best piece of work with the Clout Couple and that whole kind of run. Probably the night in Charlotte was probably my favorite memory, when I bloodied my boy up, and I've recently apologized to him for that. So that was easily my favorite memory of that company.
Very good. Very nice. So we're going to move on to something we call the three count now. It's going to be three quick questions and your answers. So obviously you're a coffee guy. Do you have a go-to Starbucks order, and does it differ when you get coffee from somewhere outside of Starbucks?
It differs, yes. Go-to at Starbucks is a VIA, as I like to call it, a venti iced Americano. And then if I go to a craft coffee shop, I'm usually getting a cortado.
And I guess I'll just ask why.
Cortados, to me, show the craftsmanship of a coffee shop, and it lets me know how much dedication they put into it. And I have a whole album of my phone of all the coffee shops that I've been to all over the country, and I take pictures of it so I can remember. And I appreciate some good latte art and some good cortado art, and I just appreciate a cortado. I think it's a coffee drinker's drink. And then at Starbucks, I just always get the VIA. That's just my go-to.
So next question. So I know that you're a kind of an expert on ear pods from seeing you around. So my brother tells me that the wired ear pods that I use look stupid. And then so do my podcast headphones. So you're the ear pod god. What step do I need to make next?
So the AirPod, when that was really part of my persona, has been laid to rest. But people still, you know, to this day kind of resonate me with it, and that's totally fine. I'm sure I've influenced many of purchases for AirPods. You know, in terms of headphones, they kind of irritate me every now and again. People might not know that. These AirPods irritate me. I hate when the left one doesn't charge the way the right one does. It's, and you're in the gym, it's very irritating. In terms of the wired headphones, I think that you should probably adapt to the times from those. But the over the head, man, I mean, listen, you're in a studio, rock some studio headphones. That's probably the best route for you.
Yeah, and just the audio on these was really good too. And also, I paid a lot for them, so I should probably stick to them, even though my brother thinks they look stupid.
Right.
But, and then the final question, if you weren't a pro wrestler, what might you be doing instead?
Probably marketing. I do enjoy it. I have a degree in it. I like the concept of advertising and working on concepts and being creative in that sense. So I think probably that, but I'm thankful that wrestling exists and I don't have to worry about that.
Do you see, jumping off of that a little bit too, do you see a lot of crossover between, you know, what your background in marketing is and pro wrestling just as an industry?
Wrestling is marketing. Yeah. It is. Wrestling is marketing. They're so equal. They are mutually exclusive.
Yeah, so you know how to do one, and you've already got kind of a starter kit for the next. So
right.
Well, Richard Holiday, thank you so much for joining me today on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. I wish you all the best of luck with everything, obviously your health and your career moving forward. I've really been enjoying it, especially the stuff I got to see from you in MLW. So glad you joined me today.
Thank you, Phil. I appreciate the words. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks again, everyone, for joining me today on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. I'd like to thank my guest, Richard Holiday, and I'd also like to thank Vic Delicious for making the connection. Follow me on Twitter at Under the Ring and on Threads at PJ Strum for the latest guest announcements, and have a great week.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.